We are back with the Buffer Podcast, and it is so good to be with each and every one of you. We hope that you're enjoying this show as we continue to crank out new episodes each and every week. And the biggest thing we can do is remind you wonderful, handsome, pretty listeners to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or our friends at anchor.fm. It really helps us out. My name is Tony Tone.
And I'm Joel Krausar.
And it's going to be one of those.
I said that like a slack jawed yokel tonight, but.
Well, and I just hope people understand, like, Joel has a real last name, as do I, but I've also had like a radio alias for 15 years. And if this is your first time listening, you know, I've been known as Tony Tone for 15 years. But that being said, people do know that I have a real last name, and it's Lokensoul. So tonight's secret word is Lokensoul.
Should Thomas Kindler substitute someday? Substitute for me?
That was your pen name? Is that correct?
So when we were writing this newspaper and I would have reporters who wouldn't get me their stuff on time, sometimes I would have to fill with stories that I had been, you know, sandbagging, and I didn't want the entire newspaper to be written by me. So I had a nom de plume, which was Thomas Kindler, and he wrote several articles for our failed publication.
I was going to say, grossly underpaid and underappreciated, Thomas Kindler, everybody. And where did that come from? Your middle name is...
It's my middle name is Thomas. And then Kindler was the street that one of the middle schools in this town is on. And I was sitting in the parking lot covering a story when I decided I was going to have to write this story under a pseudonym. And looked up in the street sign and it said Kindler. And I'm like, all right, so Kindler is going to be the last name. Thomas Kindler is my nom de plume.
It's just great to think that there are people out there that are like, I wonder what happened to that Thomas Kindler. Everybody else left that organization, but where did Thomas Kindler? I haven't seen him turn up anywhere.
I think he left when Joel did.
Mm-hmm. He is your Chris Gaines and you are Garth Brooks, right? I mean, something that's one like way that. You could look at that.
Something like that.
Has there been a more successful... And I don't even know if that's fair, but I mean,
there was Saturday Night Live.
I was going to say he literally Garth Brooks hosted SNL, and Garth Brooks as Chris Gaines was the musical guest.
Was that the episode that Will Ferrell appeared as the devil selling songs to Garth Brooks? He's like, Fred Slacks, it's an instant sensation.
100%. Yes. I remember
great sketch that was.
I don't want to try and guess the year that episode came out, but I 100% watched it live as it happened because I was so transfixed. The best part is that people still were like, I don't think Garth Brooks is the same person as Chris Gaines.
Was that a thing? Did people really not know that it was the same person? I think,
well, people are really sometimes not as smart as they should be. So, yes, it was
never a
thing. It was unfortunately a thing. All right, so let's get kind of rolling here on the podcast. We could talk about Garth Brooks and Chris Gaines, but unfortunately, we don't know when the next Chris Gaines project will come out. But what I do know is that it's a new week. If you're listening to us, maybe it's Friday, June 18th, or shortly thereafter, or it's in the future. Just a couple quick hitters, some new releases that came out on this podcast. We talk about movies and content and streaming and documentaries. New in the world this week, you've got The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard in theaters exclusively. You have Fatherhood with Kevin Hart on Netflix. Luca is an animated Disney Plus movie. Peter Rabbit 2, The Runaway is in theaters. And then I'm just going to skip right to next week, Joe, because I know you're excited. You've even gone on the record as saying you'll head to the theaters.
Are we going to see that together? Next week. Can we see that together somehow?
Where there's a will, there's a way. And quite frankly, this might be the opportune time to get kind of the old Thursday late night movie crew back together. It's F9, Fast and the Furious 9 next week. I don't know anything about it. I mean, I kind of know things about it, but how excited are you?
I'm super excited. I know that it's measured because of Peter Rabbit 2 came out or is coming out tonight, but F9 definitely has my focus. I'm kidding about Peter Rabbit 2. I'm didn't even realize they were making a sequel. It just goes to show you that children make the movie world go round.
I feel like Peter Rabbit 2, you know how some people would, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but some people would say that the Paddington Bear sequel was better than the original. I've heard the same thing about Peter Rabbit 2.
Movies are largely acclaimed, and I've never seen them. My wife has.
Yeah, they're fine. I mean, I was going to say, you know, the beautiful thing is as you get older and if you have kids or nieces and nephews, you could find yourself at a Peter Rabbit 2, and then a week later you could find yourself sitting next to your friends or family or dragging a spouse to sit through F9. I don't know if is that a date night movie? F9?
I mean, yeah, isn't John Cena showing up in this one?
Yeah, John Cena is there. Yep,
he's Vin Diesel's brother.
I don't think The Rock is in it though, is he? Jason Statham? I don't know.
Much like I do with the next movie musicals I get excited about, I try not to go too in the rabbit hole before. I want to be completely surprised by all of the Fast and Furious movies. I'm just hoping that there's some sort of a Charlie Puth tearjerker end credit scene like we had in the F6.
Well, it does seem like Charlize Theron villain reappears from F8 or Furious 8 or what?
What was insert? She was a hacker? Like what was her name? I can't remember. It was awesome though. It was well. And then I'm sure it's Judy Dench shows up not Judy Dench. Oh, who's the dame who shows up? Like not isn't like literally the dame.
Is it Maggie something?
You know who I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking
Helen
about.
Helen Mirren. That's who it is.
Yeah.
She pops up, I think, in this one as well. So either way, I've gone zero backstory on this because I just want to go in and enjoy it in all its glory. Street Racers turned Super Spies, one of the most amazing turns of a franchise and IP ever. They go from underground DVD thieves to superheroes. It's pretty amazing.
There's no way that when they released Fast and the Furious that they thought there would be 8 sequels after the original.
No, the writer's room's like, holy crap, we can literally do whatever we want and people will just eat it up.
Anything. Yeah, and the beautiful thing is now it's such a big machine that you have people that are chomping at the bit to get into it, and it's awesome. The last thing I want to mention really quick before we get into the battle this week on the buffer is just something that I personally saw and was really excited about. I don't know, I can't remember, Joel, if you ended up ever watching the first season of The Morning Show on Apple Plus.
I still haven't pulled the Apple Plus trigger yet.
So the only reason I have Apple Plus, unless Apple's listening and you want to sponsor this, then I love Apple Plus. But when I updated my iPhone, I got Apple Plus free for a year, and I watched The Morning Show with Steve Carell and Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon, and it's phenomenal. And they just dropped the teaser for season 2, which I think comes out in September or October. Don't quote me on that, but it looks really good. It's right up your alley. You'd absolutely love it.
Is it worth
paying for it though? I don't know. Palmer was really good with Justin Timberlake. That's on Apple Plus. There's a couple of things, but
Ted Lasso. That's the thing that's really keeping me on the radar. But we'll see. There might be something that has to go away for it to happen, but we'll see. We were just, you know, simple Midwesterners on a simple Midwestern modest budget.
That's right.
And, you got to pick your streaming services, and so far Apple Plus just doesn't have enough kid programming, in my understanding, to make it be one of the go-tos. So
you're just going to have to stop paying your car insurance to justify it.
I'll tell you what, though. No free ads, but I'm switching my car insurance to the same guy who you have, and it's going to save me a ton of money, like 50%.
Nice. So, yeah. Well, and I will have a funny dress socks and Crocs, another car related story later on. But we're going to jump right into the battle this week, and it's going to be another tough one. Kind of had a go-to judge because some of these battles really, it's almost not fair for us to try and litigate, make the case for the piece of content, movie, TV series, documentary, and then also have to sit here and be the judge and the jury, so to speak. But this week, I am so excited to enter Sweet Tooth on Netflix into to the buffer battle, produced by Robert Downey Jr. Sweet Tooth is beautiful. It's very well done. It has a lot of connective tissue as to what we've kind of all just been living through with the pandemic, which is very much still here and real, of course. The synopsis, spoiler alert, so I'm going to give you like a quick rundown of Sweet Tooth. It's 8 series. It starts with the world encountering a deadly virus, and humanity changes as we know it. And as the same time as humanity is changing and people are battling this virus, all of a sudden in the world of Sweet Tooth, there are half animal, half kids called hybrids. And we meet Will Forte's character, who has a baby that he is taking into the wilderness, and they create a life together. That kid grows up to be known as Gus. Will Forte's character doesn't make it. And then Gus kind of goes on his own adventure with Big Man and a slew of other characters. And what was, you know, and here's the thing I'll say, if the pandemic has been tough on you, this is probably not something you want to jump into, because there are things like face masks and social distancing and infectious disease. And I didn't really look into see when this was produced, but there were a lot of moments where I was like, wow, this is, I don't want to say it's too soon, because it is really good and it is a fictional show. But as much as there is some fantasy with like the hybrid kids, there is a lot of reality and humanity and how we sort of deal with pandemics. So I can't recommend it enough. It's beautiful. I will say I didn't know how it was going to come to a head. And again, spoiler alert, they definitely set it up for a second season, which is either good or bad. But long story short, Gus, the hybrid kid, is trying to find his mom. He was told his mom was from Colorado. He encounters this big man who is like a former semi-pro or pro football player turned body hunter, turned hybrid hunter, turned last person you thought would be a hero. They develop a relationship. They encounter a lot of people along the way. And ultimately, we are left with what appears to be Gus, the hybrid kid's mom, answering a phone. And hopefully we'll get to connect the dots a little bit more with season 2. But it's really, and I know that's a quick synopsis, but it's really beautiful. There's a lot of good subplots and sub characters that are kind of woven together. I didn't know if I would like it. And Joel and I were talking about this earlier today via text, because it does seem like it's a little fantasy-ish, but then it's so grounded in reality that I can't recommend Sweet Tooth enough to people. And I've been yelling about it for the last 4 or 5 days, Joel. And I think you got through what, one episode or half an episode?
I got through 2 today. So, okay. And it's really good. I mean, it's beautifully shot. It's the CGI is very seamless with these hybrids. It's actually, I did a little background. It's a comic. It's a comic book that goes back from September 2009 when they were first published. So it's very kind of prescient, but it's more life imitating art a little bit here than, you know, art imitating life. So it seems like this kind of this concept with this, you know, pandemic, affecting the world, the sense of once the internet went down, it all went away. Like, it's true. We were very heavily reliant on technology, and if something were to attack our technological grid, we would have issues. So, I mean, there's obviously the geopolitical aspect of it, but really it's just good storytelling. The first 2 episodes that I saw, and I'm a big Will Forte fan, and I'll kind of get into that a little bit going into guilty pleasures here. But you know, it's the kid's outstanding. The Gus, the actor who plays Gus, it's almost Dakota Fanning level, you know, child performance. I remember when she was, you know, War of the Worlds, and, you know, in her, what was it, Eternal Sunshine? No, that's Abigail Breslin. But Dakota Fanning, Man on Fire, you know, some of these performances where it's like the kid is better than the adults on the screen. And that's not a knock on any of the adults on the screen. I think it just shows we have a star in the making, kind of in this Gus, this young boy actor. So
it's super
intriguing.
Good.
It's intriguing. I'll probably stick with it. I might be one who's just kind of a little pandemic fatigued, where it's not like what I really want to be going to.
Sure.
And I think that's why I was drawn to what I was drawn to when I, for what I'm bringing into the, to the buffer battle.
You can't ever go wrong with a James Brolin narrated series, just, though.
Just Thanos' dad just rocking the narration.
Unbelievable.
Just Barbra Streisand's husband.
It's just so great. Christian Convery or Convery, however you say it. That's your actor who plays Gus. Yeah. that just goes to show you, like, you know, the DC comic angle. As much as I am a comic fan, I think I had heard that, but I didn't like look for the source material because I just enjoyed it so much. Right. And I also don't want to be the guy that's like, well, in the comics, you know, and I'm sure that there's things that deviate from that, like they always do. But yeah, really, really well done. And if you love a good production, and it is a little bit of a commitment, like I said, it's 8 episodes in an hour a piece, but it's worth checking out for sure.
Yeah, I'm glad you pushed it my way. I'm glad I gave it a shot, because if I was just reading the description, there's no way I was hitting play. I'm just going to be honest.
And admittedly, when I started it, I was like, I don't know about this. Like, I'm the first one to admit that I haven't seen or read any of the Harry Potter books or movies. And like, I'm not to say that I don't enjoy fantasy, but I was just like, okay, is this going to be... this might not hook me, right? I think right. We all kind of look for the hook with stuff like that, especially if you're going to consider committing, 8 hours of your life to watching something. But yeah, and then you kind of went, I like the direction that you go. It's total, like, that's the best part about this podcast, is that we could put up a sweet tooth, 8-part, you know, produced Warner Brothers series, and then you're like, here comes the curveball.
Here comes the curveball. Here comes the Peacock documentaries, which the one that I selected is called My Pursuit. It's the life and legacy. It's the Jordan Burroughs story. We're right around the corner from the Olympics. We are watching the Olympic swim trials tonight. I've got a swimmer in my family. Even before our son got into swimming, my wife and I vividly remember we started dating when one of the Summer Olympics, I think it was, I can't remember which one. It might have been, it was Beijing. It was right around the time the Beijing, they all blur together because the first 7 years of my professional career, the company I worked for was heavily involved in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big Olympics guy, long story short. I'm a big wrestling guy, this Jordan Burroughs, if you're not familiar, he was a standout wrestler at the University of Nebraska, an African-American wrestler from Lincoln, Nebraska. And he, in the 2012 Olympics, kind of shocked the world and won the gold medal. And he was not expected. He was not the favorite to win the gold at 74 kilos, kilograms, for those of you who don't know what that means. And he then got married, had a couple of kids, and then went to repeat in Rio and fell short. And it really was a shock to everyone that he did not only not win the gold medal, but he didn't even make the podium. And this documentary is just one episode so far. It's going to be a weekly release documentary series. So just the first episode as they build up to the Olympic trials, and then obviously to the Tokyo Olympics at the end of July. So it's super well made, and he's got 3 little kids. He goes to the gym with his daughter, who's a 4-year-old and is in gymnastics, and, you know, just doing regular dad stuff. But all at the same time, he is what's considered a geriatric Olympic athlete. He's
32.
Yeah, he's 32, but he's old.
Wow. I mean,
he's old for the sport. And he's trying to not, because it's not like other sports. You can't just get your ticket punched. You've got to qualify at the Olympic wrestling trials at the end of July, at the end of the month. So it's all building up to this. And if he makes the Olympic team, he's going to go for a shot to try to get the medal. And hit the big running theory or theme is, I don't want my last Olympics to define my international career. And I think that's the crux, that the duality of the athlete that I always find interesting, is that no one is great forever. I mean, look at Michael Jordan. I mean, if he had, when he came back, the Washington Wizards, Michael Jordan, it's not the Michael Jordan that any of us want to remember. But the reality is that's what he was at the end of his career. And so all of these athletes, as they get to the end, one of my friends, A.G. Krueger, was a three-time Olympic hammer thrower. And so I kind of got to see some of this, you know, not firsthand, but, you know, tangentially, just watching him qualify. And the last Olympics, he wasn't supposed to go and he did make it. And it's just watching these athletes who are so specialist driven and they're these specific sports. I think that's what really makes the Olympics are amazing to me. And it just lends itself to a fertile documentary. There's another one on Ryan Lochte, who's 34, trying to make the Olympic team and wow. kind of atone for the disaster that was the Rio Olympics, that ended with him being basically kicked out of the country for, you know, stealing booze at a nightclub. And then there's also a documentary on Peacock about the Rio Olympic relay team that shocked France. And it was really well done. I mean, so my pursuit's kind of what I picked, but I kind of could have enveloped all of these Olympic documentaries on Peacock as they gear up for the Olympics. It's just fantastic. And hopefully my girl Shelby Houlihan, the Sioux City East grad whom I've known since she was 8 years old, who just got flagged for a doping violation. And they're letting her run at the trials starting tomorrow. Hopefully she's able to win her appeal. Apparently you can test positive for performance enhancing drugs if you eat pork that have been have consumed that hormone. So which, gosh, that would just, what a fluke thing if I believe long time rated and we get another Iowan in the Olympics on the track. So
what is a 32-year-old wrestler? So like, and it's not, I watched the first episode and his story is awesome and I love what he's trying to do, and it's just so crazy that I'm 5 years older than this guy and he's like considered old in his sport. But whatever, it is what it is. You're right, you see, yeah. football players are considered old at what, 30,
28 29?
Crazy. So like, but the practical person in me is like, how's this guy paying? Like, what do
he
they make
money? His own Nike wrestling shoe. Like, he's got, okay, endorsements. So these guys make endorsement dollars, and they wrestle in these tournaments. And he was supposed to wrestle.
And I know he trains MMA fighters, it seems like.
Yeah. Or, so he's a very diversified. So
like
guy.
He's obviously well established. So maybe that's not a fair question for him. But I always wonder, like,
But you're right, though. He's not making a fraction of what the worst professional basketball player is making.
Yeah, right.
So it's like the last guy on the bench on the worst team in the NBA is making probably $1.3 million a year, and Jordan Burroughs might be making $100,000 a year with his endorsements.
Crazy.
And he was supposed to wrestle Isaiah Martinez, Imar is his nickname, and he's a three-time national champ. But Imar didn't make weight, so they had to scratch that fight. So they had these, wow, kind of exhibition bouts. There's a Rumble in the Bronx wrestling tournament. They've had wrestling tournaments on aircraft carriers.
What?
Yeah. They've really tried to be creative to grow the sport, because it is, you know, we live in Iowa where it's a big deal. But everywhere else it's not. So it's good to also see a documentary like this to bring a sport that I care a lot about into the forefront for people to see how these guys train and work.
Okay, so then are they getting paid to wrestle in the Olympics?
I believe so. I'm not 100% sure how that.
Boy, I'd hope so. Just given how many
structure
billions of dollars, you know, folks like NBC are making, yeah, and
the
paying.
Olympic industrial complex is a very profitable one, to say the
least. Yeah, I mean, it's a hell of a thing to say to a country, you know. And I'm not the anti-Olympics guy, but I also can understand the argument about like why hosting the Olympics maybe isn't what it seems, and sometimes you're left with these shell of a stadiums.
Well,
and
it is, the countries that can handle it well can handle it. Like, look at Los Angeles. You know, the LA Coliseum where USC plays their football games, that was built for the Olympics. So
sure.
There's and which LA is getting the Olympics again in 2028, I think.
Wow.
So
yeah.
So we're gonna
and don't get me wrong, I watch, like, I it's not it's appointment
so it's so
viewing
great.
For me. It's more, I'm like more of a casual watcher. I mean, there's certain things that I would watch more than others. I love basketball, obviously, but then I also have an affinity for the winter.
Three on three in this one.
3-on-3 basketball in the Olympics.
Yeah,
that is awesome.
And the United States didn't make it. They didn't qualify.
What?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Three guys they picked were like Robbie Hummel. It was all good. They couldn't get real players, so it was
wow.
It was two guys who are broadcasters for the Big Ten Network and another guy were the three that were trying to make it.
I also feel like the world, so to speak, has gotten better at basketball. That said, I you know, any dream team, any Team America,
Christian Laettner, man.
Yeah, any team that's comprised of NBA players. But I will say I do love when it's a good game. All right. So that being said, my pursuit on Peacock, one episode so far. Do you know how many in total?
I think it's with probably Jordan's? Two or three.
Okay. Because it's more, is My Pursuit the name of the series? And then it's Jordan Burroughs, it's Ryan Lochte, it's
no,
or is it?
Because Ryan Lochte has a whole different franchise whole different title. So I think that My Pursuit is the Jordan Burroughs part. And I think that they're going to probably do a bunch of these. And, because remember, Peacock, they built Peacock to be the Olympics streaming platform. And then when the Olympics got postponed, they had to pivot Peacock into being, okay, let's go get Parks and Rec. Let's go get The Office. Let's go get these and put them all on Peacock.
WWE.
Yeah. And so that was their pivot, because it was originally basically just supposed to be your live stream Olympics platform. And now they're finally able to launch. They had probably all this stuff built. Now they had time to build these originals and go. So I'm thrilled with it. I like it. It's good. Sweet Tooth probably has a little bit more longevity. I mean, these documentaries are very timely because of what's happening. But I think it's a worthy opponent.
Yeah, it gets into that conversation like mass appeal, but it's tough to even make that argument because the Olympics have pretty darn big.
I know, that's why that was my hope. Just the fact that so many people who don't even claim to like sports get into the Olympics.
Yeah, and wrestling for sure.
It was the original Olympic sport.
Right. Given where, and especially where we're at in Iowa, is such a big deal and there's so much history. Is there something to be said, like, if My Pursuit, the Jordan Burroughs Peacock documentary, defeats, pins Sweet Tooth, but then Jordan gets pinned, do we have to go back and like adjust the records?
Because I think that it's a very compelling ending to the story.
You want to see it right off into the with a gold medal, or even just to medal. It sounds like if he can medal, but that would be saying a lot. Now I will say on. True. Sweet Tooth season one, Rotten Tomatoes, 98% on the old tomato meter and tomato meter, tomometer.
It's tomatometer, we decided.
91% audience score. So that's very high praise.
I think that it's the winner, but I want people to watch My Pursuit, and I want people to support their local high school wrestling programs and their local college wrestling programs, because if you're an opponent of this name, image, and likeness legislation that the NCAA is dragging their feet on, which is not paying players, it's giving athletes the opportunity to go out and secure endorsement contracts based off of their own personal name, image, and likeness. If you are not in favor of it, then you are willing to kill every non-revenue sport that exists at the collegiate level. If you are in favor of it, then you're willing to let these wrestling programs survive, because these wrestlers, they get 11 scholarships for 10 weights. And so they're dividing those 11 scholarships usually in three quarters to half to one quarter. So it might even be less than 11. I actually think it's 7.5 scholarships is what they get for wrestling. So,
wow.
And that's just at the Division I level. At the smaller levels, it's even less. So here's my stump for women's sports and non-revenue sports. Name, image, and likeness would give an athlete like Spencer Lee, who is a three-time national champ at Iowa, who is a Hodge Trophy winner, an absolute phenomenon. He won the national championship at 125 pounds with no ACLs this past spring, and that's why he's not wrestling in the Olympics. He would have made $300,000 to $500,000 in endorsement contract this year.
Wow.
There's no doubt in my mind. And he would have had to pay income taxes on that. But that is what we're saying. These non-revenue sports, these athletes could make money. And this documentary shows how much they need it, because these guys are literally the best in the world at what they do. Go watch the Foxcatcher documentary on Netflix as well. They're the best in the world at what they do, and they can barely afford to feed their family and pay rent and pay their mortgage. So,
and it's tough because the cynics out there would say, well, then find something else to do. But we all know that somebody's making money off these guys, and it's not right.
Right.
And that's the thing. Like, right is right and wrong is wrong. And it's not necessarily fair that, to your point, these people, these athletes are working so hard, committing so much.
I had a bigger scholarship to sing at the college that I went to than the football people I was around. I got more money, and I could go sing at a funeral, sing at a church service, get paid to do that. I could have voice students come to the college. I could use the facility for free to make money. But because there was no NCAA to say that was against the rules, no one even batted an eye at it, and it was encouraged.
Wow.
Let's treat the student athletes the way that we treat every other student. Let's let them, if they're marketable in a capitalist free market society, let's let them go out and make the money. And so that way they can do what they can do to the best of their ability. And hopefully you see that in a documentary like with Jordan Burroughs, that these guys are literally training, you know, to 8 to 12 hours a day to represent a country.
Yep.
That, especially as a black athlete, you know, he's got other issues. I mean, he's got other political things he's also concerned about, not just wrestling. So it's really interesting.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure they're going to dive into that more, you know, with Juneteenth being Sunday and everything that's going on there. So it's I'm just intrigued to see the turns that this could take, because there's it's a fertile story. And Jordan Burroughs is an intriguing person. So, and a pretty charismatic dude. And his wife has a master's in journalism, so she knows what she's doing, you know, on this documentary as well. So it's just, I think it's a smart thing that Peacock did and run this out there.
It's definitely worth exploring, but in this week's Buffer Battle, Sweet Tooth taking down My Pursuit. Fine. with the old insert wrestling move that's not a pile driver. All right, we're gonna step away for a quick break.
Little fireman's carry. Fireman's carry, a little suplex.
I've watched a lot more WWE than I have real wrestling.
Exact opposite. I've seen very little WWE, but I've got,
stick around for the Rock and Sock connection is all I have to say. All right, we'll be right back. That's right. We'll be right back as my dogs continue to fight after this break. Hang tight. All right, we're back. It's the Buffer Podcast, and we're back with more dog fights in the background if you're tuning in. And even if you can't hear that.
Don't say dog fights, because people are going to think like Michael Vick world going on. It's just you have two dogs who sometimes like to tussle. A corgi and a puggle? Is that what you have?
Yes, we have a corgi. A corgi that's not even one, and his name is Doc, after Dr. Emmett L. Brown from Back to the Future. And a puggle whose name is Archie, and they're both going to be buried in my backyard in about 5 minutes.
Don't say that. You're going to get the PETA people after us.
Well, I wish I was kidding, but no, I am kidding a little bit. All right, so we're talking about dogs. Please, come on. Somebody help me with the dogs. We're talking about Buffer Guilty Pleasures, and this is an opportunity on the show where we are able to have a conversation about things that we're watching that maybe they're not going to be the first thing that we admit openly if it's a conversation at work or if it's a conversation around our family and friends. And Joel, I'm going to let you start. And I feel like this is a pretty good confession. I wouldn't be ashamed of what you're going to share.
Yeah, this is more of a guilty pleasure than it is anything. And it's it was unique. And it's interesting because Will Forte, we were just talking about him in a post-apocalyptic, you know, dramatic show in Sweet Tooth, and it's not the first rodeo for him in post-apocalyptic world,
right?
Fox had a brilliant show several years ago that's available on Hulu, The Last Man on Earth. I watched it when it came out, loved every second of it, watched every episode, recorded it on the DVR. Will Forte, Jason Sudeikis, all kinds of amazing people pop up and throughout this show, and I don't think it ever got the grand acclaim that it deserved. I know critically it was celebrated, but I've rediscovered it a couple weeks ago, and man, has it been fun to just go back and watch this series. I think there were three seasons all over again on Hulu, and it's one that, you know, it's not the first thing in everybody's mind, but it's really fun to go to, and it's kind of like sneaking a brownie at 10 o'clock at night. It kind of gives you that same feeling. It's kind of a guilty pleasure that it's like, man, I forgot how much joy this show, you know, Jason Sudeikis with half a beard and Will Forte singing karaoke together. I forgot how enjoyable this show was. It's just brilliantly done, well-written. And Will Forte is an actor I don't think that gets enough credit, because MacGruber is obviously horribly silly. But if you've ever seen the movie A Good Old-Fashioned Orgy, which is Nick Kroll, Jason Sudeikis, yep, Lake Bell, that whole crew. I mean, it is, Will Forte is so good, and he steals that movie away from some guys who it's hard to steal from. So it's he's someone I can ride with all the time, even with the Justin Timberlake, you know, bringing on back the Homelessville sketch on Saturday Night Live. Will Forte, not celebrated enough, and The Last Man on Earth, I think, solidifies that for me.
Yeah, and I feel like didn't that start on Fox, and then, yeah, it like became a cult classic, and didn't it have to like move elsewhere to be continued? Or, and I could be wrong.
It might have, but I don't remember that whole story. I just know that I had a DVR that just kind of tracked it. So if it did jump networks, I didn't realize that it did. And
I'm a fan of a series that you think has its run, and then it's like, whoa, where do these fans come from? And then
Brooklyn Nine-Nine was the same one.
Yeah, wasn't Southland another one, that cop drama that went from like NBC to whatever?
Wasn't Jericho one also that was got canceled?
So.
And then the fans threw a stink. I never watched that show, but
I love when fan service can be done on shows like that. My buffer confession is,
this is guilty pleasures. We're not confessing yet.
All right, I'm sorry. Guilty pleasures. It's two. It's two things. I'm going to start with the one that's a little bit more timely, given that Father's Day is this Sunday. I was thinking about, you know, not Father's Day movies, but certainly you could throw this one in there. But Mr. Mom is a movie that I can enjoy time and time again. And I think Mr. Mom was a movie that I saw for the first time when I was very young, and I didn't really appreciate all the subtleties that are in it and how good Michael Keaton is. All the performances are so great. So if you haven't revisited that, I believe it came out in the same year I was born, 1983. It's a classic. But the one thing that I can't stop watching because of the podcast that's going along with it is The Sopranos. And I've probably used that before as a guilty pleasure, but it's because, yep, of Talking Sopranos podcast with Steve Scirripa and Michael Imperioli, where they are literally rewatching each episode and talking about it, and then they have guests. It's a phenomenal podcast, and I'm kind of in step with them. I haven't been rewatching it the whole time, but they're into season 5, and it's fun to revisit The Sopranos because it holds up, and it's just as good as it was 14, 15 years ago.
It's amazing that those shows are all that old now, too.
I know. It's crazy. And I mean, you take away like a flip phone or a janky looking computer or an older car, and The Sopranos just, you could tell somebody it came out a year ago and they wouldn't know, save for all those things I just mentioned. All right, we're going to open up the confessional, step inside, and there's a lot to share and some big surprises, I think, ahead. So let's slide in here. This might be one that gets people really riled up.
I couldn't believe it when I saw it on the sheet.
We've been talking a lot about big time summer blockbuster movies. Tis the season. People are going back to the theaters. And when you do a Google search or a Bing search or a Yahoo or whatever you're searching with.
No one's using Bing. What the might hell? Be.
Listen, if Microsoft and Bing want to sponsor us, we're open to
Explorer that's going bye-bye in a couple weeks?
DuckDuckGo? Is that like the private search engine that people are using for like QAnon stuff? Wherever you're searching, if you do a search of the top 30 greatest summer movies, you're going to be pleasantly surprised when you see the list. Maybe not surprised, but what's going to shock you is when I tell everybody that I have not seen in its entirety, or at least more than 75% of Thelma and Louise.
It's just stupid that you haven't. Like, it's one of the most
is it though?
It is. It's one of the best, most important movies. It was like one of the first. It's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid level, but women. I mean, no movie was this. Two women leads who people just completely bought into the whole way and were the primary characters. It was groundbreaking.
Don't I get a pass though, because it Thelma and Louise comes out in 91, so I'm 8. My dad's taking us to Terminator 2, granted. And it's one of those things, like, I feel like I know the premise, and the premise is Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon, Thelma and Louise, drive over a cliff in a convertible holding hands.
Well, is that just because you watched The Simpsons?
What happens? I mean, I didn't even know that Harvey Keitel and Michael Madsen and Christopher McDonald and Brad Pitt were in it.
Theatrical debut or cinematic debut is this movie. Michael Madsen's phenomenal in this movie. You need to see it.
Is it?
It's okay that you haven't, but you should. Is what I'm saying.
I don't even think is it okay. So is Thelma and Louise in a top 20 list of greatest movies of all time?
Well, that's not necessarily. Is that the criteria? The right? It's top 100. It's in the AFI top 100, I believe.
I would believe that. I would like to say that I'll get to it because I have come around on a lot of the things in the Buffer Confessional that I haven't seen. And I love Ridley Scott movies.
I think, he's my favorite director. So maybe that's another thing, like, why I like it so much. But
yeah, no, you're entitled to love it. I mean, Ridley Scott's hard to not like, and I've even supported some of his maybe not as well liked features. But yeah, so Thelma and Louise is what I'm sharing, because in the Buffer Confessional, it's safe to share things that we haven't seen. And I also feel like what you're about to say is almost as egregious, and it's literally the second movie that they showed us in the film class, the film history class I took as a senior at Oak Park and River Forest High School in 2001-2002.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't go to high school in the birthplace of Ernest Hemingway, but I did go to high school in the birthplace of Murray Weir and former NBA great, long before Michael Jordan. But American Graffiti is the movie that I have never seen that I think people would be surprised. I know it's one of George Lucas's first feature films. I believe he had to make it in order to get to make Star Wars. Ron Howard, is he involved in it as well? Is he in it?
If you can turn that type of profit, you can pretty much make any kind of movie you want.
That way
after
your next
that
pitch can be, okay, so there's this galaxy and it's far, far away. Now hear me out here. There's these droids that beep. They don't even say words,
But they're brother and sister, but they love each other. And hold on.
And their dad's a bad guy, and the brother and sister make out. But we have these really cool swords that are just flashlights that actually have energy. So American Graffiti is the reason that the Coke fever dream of Star Wars was born.
I would just want you to know, though, American Graffiti, how good is it? 1973 Academy Awards, nominated but did not win Best Director, Best Writing.
So what did win in 73?
Oh, come on. I don't know what won in 73.
You had it pulled up, I thought.
I don't have it pulled up, but I do have it. I did have George Lucas's bio pulled up. And I'm not going to sit here and say I'm the biggest George Lucas fan, but I do feel like that American Graffiti is just talked about. You want to talk about... probably in a top 10 list. It seems to be there. I mean, it was certainly there when I was in high school, and I remember sitting there thinking, wow, this is different. I wasn't expecting this. But yeah, it's very good, but that's why we do the buffer confessional, so that you can safely share things that you haven't encountered. And I do feel like for people to listen to the show each week, I would hope by now, if you're listening to the Buffer podcast and you wonder who Slappy Pappy is, that you have gotten on YouTube and searched Saturday Night Live, Bobby Moynihan, Slappy Pappy, when they did the little spoof on comedians. It's very good. And we're going to give you a little taste of the one and only Mr. Slappy Pappy right now as we get ready for dress socks and Crocs.
The answer, though, is Godfather. Godfather is what was nominated for Best Picture in 73.
Makes sense.
Slappy Pappy, wait.
Dress socks and Crocs.
Parenting, life, wins, losses, and everything in between. I went first with the confessional, so I'll defer to you. And again, we are heading into Father's Day weekend, so for all dads out there, including Joel and I, we wish everybody a happy Father's Day. It's a very tough holiday, Joel, when you try to think about what to get dad. I know I can tell you with the utmost certainty, it wasn't Father's Day, but it was Christmas when I was in high school. They had just released the Godfather trilogy on DVD, and I bought it for my dad, and I think I've shared this story that a year later it remained unopened and I took it back from him. So what do you get dad? I'm going to see my dad. I'm going to go to Chicago this Sunday. What am I going to get him? I'm inclined to get him a bottle of booze. Is that really what he needs? I don't know. Is it weird to give my dad cash? Because here's what I know, Joel, he's not going to have anything for me, but I'm also not his dad.
Right. And right? I have no expectation from that my dad should give me a Father's Day gift. And also, I live a half a mile from my father, and I see him almost every day. You know, he's at every one of his grandkids' ball games. He's, you know, over at our house, you know, fixing things, helping me fix stuff if I need it and things. So, and I've asked him before, I'm like, what do you want for Father's Day? And he's like, honestly, just keep putting up with my crap and letting me hang out. Like that's really what's most important to him, is just access. And honestly, like, I remember Father's Day was a lot of, like, we'd go play golf or do things like that with my dad. But for me, it's like Father's Day gifts, I don't really want my kids to get me anything. I really just want my wife to say, go buy what you need, and like just go get what I want. And that happened last weekend. I needed a new string trimmer, and I got to actually go out and unfettered, unrestricted. It was my wife's, like, she didn't even ask how much it cost. It was just go buy it, go buy what you need. And that nice. Honestly, from a Father's Day gift standpoint, that's huge. And then my big thing is getting to watch my kids do what they want to do. And my daughter has a dance recital on Saturday, so I can't wait to just watch her. She loves to dance, it's her favorite thing. And so just getting to spend the weekend seeing my kids actually do what they love. My son had his best baseball game of the year last night, and then my youngest started t-ball this week. So I remember when I first had kids, it was that first couple Father's Day, you know, you got a big to do about the gift side of it. And now I'm, you know, 10 years into this, I really don't care. Like, I just want to hang out with my kids. And it's kind of funny because, like, the opposite of Mother's Day. Mother's Day is, can you just take the kids somewhere and I can have some peace and quiet? I don't mean that to be funny. I mean, it's just,
yeah, I get it.
My wife is with our children 20 hours a day, it seems like. And so it's just funny how that's how our relationship works, and it works for us. But, you know, Father's Day gifts, I remember getting my dad a golf club that I just really wanted to use. So it was like, many of my Father's Day gifts were things that I also wanted. We got my mom a malt maker for Mother's Day one year.
Wow.
When I was a kid, because we wanted her to make us malts.
That's so awesome.
That didn't go over very well, everybody.
I remember one Mother's Day, like, getting, so my parents were divorced when I was 3. So this Mother's Day was, I was maybe 10, 11, or 12. And my dad, you know, because of course I don't have any money. So it's awkward to have your divorced parent giving you, anyway, long story short, my mom got like a Kathy Ireland workout VHS tape.
Yes.
And it just felt really bad. But she also was like a big, like, she always had a Bally's gym membership. And then we would always have to, my brother and I would be subjected to the Bally's, like, gated off daycare, which was like this shady, like, you know, AV cart TV. And then, like, somebody, I don't know, it was just weird. But I'm kind of like the opposite of you a little bit. Like, I don't have a lot of expectations for Father's Day, but I do feel like I would rather give an answer as to if I wanted something versus being surprised with something that I ultimately don't need. My wife is the queen of, like, paying attention. And if I say something, and that's where I have to be careful. Like, if I say something like to the effect of wanting, like, whatever, that would be something that she would make a note of and get for me. I will say, like what you did with the string trimmer, and she doesn't know this and she just went upstairs, but just this afternoon I bought myself a new Cubs hat online because I'm going to go to a Cubs game for my birthday in September, and I thought I can afford a new Cubs hat. And I mean, it's just kind of like that. I would like to sleep in, but we're not going to do that because, like I mentioned, we're going to take it.
I'm going to spend 8 o'clock church on Sunday.
I was
going
to say, I'm going to spend 6 hours round trip in a van from Iowa to Chicago in the same day. Now, I could stay overnight at my dad's house, but again, kids that are young do not do well sleeping in strange places. So I'd rather wake up at 6 a.m. like we always do. Be on the road by 7:30, and then anyways, that's what we're going to be doing. Dress socks and Crocs for me is the saga of the vehicle repairs. So 2 weeks ago I found out I had a nail stuck in a tire on my dad van, and that led to 4 new tires because apparently they were all bald. So that was $650 for those keeping track at home, even though it was buy one get one tire free. Hit me. And then it was last Friday, oddly enough, when I was making a drive to the Quad Cities and my mom noticed a crack in my windshield. So I had my windshield replaced today, and that was $300. So in 3 weeks, I have spent $950 on my vehicle. And I'm inclined to say when that happens, now this isn't a vehicle that is nickel and diming me with respects to, like, mechanical prop. This is a Toyota. It'll never have any mechanical problems, but I do kind of have that feeling, like, and I don't know why that is, when you drop $1,000 into this vehicle that you rely on every day. Now you're like, I gotta get something different. The new windshield looks great. It has that new windshield smell, but I'm hoping that I don't have to spend any more money on this vehicle for at least, could I get a month?
You just got to remember, though, that even if you do have another big expense, that's still only about 3 months of a car payment on something new. So just live in the life of the paid off vehicle. That's kind of what I've had to force myself to do. And especially just knowing how our kids and dogs just destroy every nice thing we have.
Anyway. Oh, yeah. And I'm not in a rush to get anything. I mean, we just moved, so I'm not in a hurry to get a bigger car payment. If anything, I would drive this current vehicle until it cannot be driven, but that's just where I'm at.
I also just wanted to one last thing, because it's coming up. You know, Father's Day is great and everything, but it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't somehow tricked my wife into marrying me. That was 15 years ago, Tony, and three days we'll have our 15th wedding anniversary. So it's, wow. It's exciting. It's hard to believe that it's been that long, but
that's crazy.
15 years. So it's a big day. I know she does actually listen to the podcast. So happy anniversary, Hannah. I love you. Thanks for putting up with all of the crap and, all the stuff that, you know, you and I have done together. Our wives have had to kind of ride along with our ambitions. Mm-hmm. So I know that they could probably have their own podcast on all the times we've left them alone with their children. So
and it might be better than this one. So, and that's the reality that we're finding ourselves in. That's awesome. Happy anniversary.
Podcast 15 years.
Wow. 15 years is like, man, I think about where I was 15 years ago, and I was a dumb 22-year-old.
I was a dumb 24-year-old.
But it's just crazy. That's outstanding. Good for you guys. All right. Well, that would win in a buffer battle. 15 years.
Hopefully 15 more. Awesome. And beyond.
All right. Well, this week it was Sweet Tooth just kind of squeaking out a victory over My Pursuit, the Jordan Burroughs story. You can't go wrong when you check out the latest in streaming content, the latest in theatrical releases. Go support your local theater and make sure you continue to listen to the Buffer podcast. Again, wherever you get your podcasts, we're on anchor.fm. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and it's really easy to hit the subscribe button so that you don't even have to think about it. It could just be a Friday in the future, and all of a sudden you go to your podcast app and there is the Buffer. That's how I have it. And we love if you could leave a review. That helps us out immensely. So we'll be back next week. And until then, happy Father's Day. Happy anniversary to Joel and his wife. And we'll see what enters the Buffer battle next week.
It's got to be F9, right? Here. We gotta
I don't even think there can be a battle. It really should just be like, ridiculous, how great is F9?
Yeah, now that we're getting some newer content and we're getting back into the theaters, and maybe we can have a battle, but then every once in a while just talk about what we love. So
there you go.
All right, is that it?
We're out of here, everybody. Next week, Vin Diesel, watch out.
Friend of the podcast also, Joe Wieskamp, congratulations, invited to the NBA basketball combine, Muscatine's own. And actually, I know Joe listens, so
that is awesome.
Congratulations, bud. We're all pulling for you.